Welcome to the Blister Podcast, a program dedicated to interesting people, the great outdoors, and a bunch of other stuff we like. I'm Jonathan Ellsworth, the founder of Blister, and you can check us out online at blisterreview.com. There's been another shakeup in the ski world, and just today, Matt Sturbins, the founder of Forefront Skis, and Jason Leventhal, the founder of Line Skis, Full Tilt Boots, and his new company, J Skis, have announced that Leventhal is acquiring Forefront and that the transaction should close early next month. Sturbins and Leventhal were both early and significant players in the indie ski scene, and Forefront has built up a very loyal and passionate fan base. So what does this acquisition mean for Forefront? What changes and what stays the same? To answer these and other questions, I spoke with Leventhal and Sturbins to talk about the deal, what brought it about, what we can expect going forward, and the state of the ski industry in general. This episode of the Blister Podcast is presented by High Brew Coffee. On our last podcast, we told you that High Brew has switched up their ready-to-drink cold brew coffee recipe, trading out stevia for natural cane sugar. And everyone I know who's tried the new High Brew has fully approved. But there's another cool thing about High Brew that's also worth knowing. High Brew has partnered with the De Los Andes Cooperative of Colombia, which will allow High Brew to give back to and make a measurable difference in the coffee growers' community where the coffee beans originate, improving the quality of life for the growers. And in addition to that, new infrastructure will be created in the community, like a new wet mill, which will increase environmental sustainability, decreasing the consumption of water used, with the ultimate goal of saving 20 million liters of water from contamination. David Smith, the founder of High Brew, had this to say about it, and I think it's worth repeating. Quote, "Giving back to those involved on the ground with coffee growing has been a passion of mine since I started High Brew. And knowing that we are not only providing the highest quality coffee to our consumers, but also improving the quality of life for thousands of farmers speaks to our core value to provide a higher standard in coffee," end quote. Bottom line here, High Brew isn't just a company that makes great tasting cold brew coffee, it's a company that's trying to do things the right way. So picking some up will make you feel good in multiple ways. Go to highbrewcoffee.com to check out all their flavors and use their store locator to see where you can grab some. And now, let's get to my conversation with Jason Leventhal and Matt Sturbins. Why don't we just start real simply, and I'll ask you guys the question, what just happened?
I love the theatrics here.
Yeah, we had a record winter, if you weren't paying attention, and it's already the end of June, and we're still just like super high from the winter, so we're like, what can we do to shake up skiing? Because we really already direly miss it because it was such a great winter last year. So thought, hey, what the heck? Let's join forces and really, you know, kick the ball down the hill. It's going to be good.
Okay. Jason, how would you describe what just happened?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know me. I mean, I'm always in it for the good of skiing, and I've been doing it forever, Matt's been doing it for a long time as well. And so I'm just a fan of all brands, like anyone that's doing something good for skiing, which is, everyone that's contributing to the sport in any possible way. You know, you can make product, you can make media content, you can just go skiing. Like, just the sport needs as many enthusiastic people, brands, products to rev people up and, really just get people involved in the sport. And for me, the more brands, the better. I mean, when I started in 95, it was just a bunch of really gigantic corporations, like seven of them, let's say. It was like Atomic, Thumb, and Rossi, K2, Elan, Nordica, those types of brands. There were no startups. There were no like people making skis, like no in their garage. There was no microbrews. There was not, it was a very stagnant, very conservative industry. And so, I mean, I'm going back a ways here, but just this is where my thought process comes from. So once I started Line back in the day, and then other brands came along like Armada and Forefront, you know, in 2002 it was Forefront, and then many more, and it just kind of kept increasing the rate of new brands that were building skis just out of pure passion and enthusiasm. And the more people that did it, the more innovation there was, and the more people putting money back into the sport, unlike some of the big corporations that are publicly owned, where the money literally gets drained out of the industry. It's the small guys that continually put it back in. So Forefront being one of them, not only one of them, being one of the first. I mean, it was one of the first three that are still around today. You know, it was Lion, Armada, Forefront, and then it just kept going. I just feel that this brand is really important to the sport, and its history is really important. And the vision that it has has a place that should be permanent here. And I just want to contribute to that brand to help make that happen. You know, and I've been friends with Matt for a long time. And I talk with all the brands, and, you know, it just over just super casual conversations on the chairlift, or I'd be in Utah, you know, at a magazine product test and just stop by his place. And, you know, just, we just share ideas, and I do this with everyone. I talk with Icelandic and ON3P and, you know, Moment, and just anyone I can, I try to contribute and share ideas, and they share their ideas with me and vice versa. And we gain something as like a lot of brands working towards a bigger goal. So then with Forefront, it just, you know, it made sense that I could lend a hand to Matt, and, you know, we can learn from each other and probably take this thing a lot further together than officially separately.
Yep.
We can both gain something, you know, without, you know, beyond being competitors. That's like, I don't even think of my current J Ski brand as a competitor to anyone, really.
Yep.
I think of it as a compliment to brands.
So Matt, that we just got sort of Jason's take on this, and I'm curious how you would sort of talk about, you know, how this came to be. And Jason said at the end, you know, he sees that there's something that we can both gain in this. And I guess I'm curious about that. You know, what is the gain here? Aside that you might have to talk to Leventhal more, for better or for ill.
No, it's always been my pleasure to talk with Jason. He's been a positive source of inspiration from day one, you know, and my background was, you know, in mogul skiing in the Midwest, moved out to Tahoe right around the time when slopestyle and big air became a thing. And I was just fortunate to kind of catch my stride in those sports. And the community that was influencing me at the time, a lot of those guys were Jason's athletes, Dash Long, Scogan Spring, Mike LaRoche. I think Chris Austin's for some period of time was even floating around there on some of the very first full-length line skis, as I like to call them. And so, you know, getting to know Jason, it was initially kind of like a wow factor, because here were all these peers of mine that were skiing for him. And then just like how real he was with, like, when Forefront started lending a hand. I remember his engineer coming over and telling me, like, the edge profile we were using was compromising the tip radiuses of our skis finish. And it was just like, wow, like, these dudes, like, really care. And Jay had a pretty tight crew back then, and so did we. So it was much like a brotherhood from the very beginning. And as I've progressed through running the business now, coming into our 15th year, you know, we're starting to realize that there's a lot of similarities between Jay's latest endeavor with Jay Skis and the future destination for Forefront. You know, it's retail has changed a lot, and we have some outrageous outrageously supportive retailers of the brand since day one that we continue to work with to this day. But the demands for us to perform at retail have gotten harder and harder. And Jay's always been a positive source of insight into what we can do to achieve independence, in making sure that we are able to sustain year after year operations, even after the last 3-year drought that we just finally crawled out of. So this was a great winter, and it created some opportunity for Jay and I to collaborate on a variety of topics that
ultimately proved that we had a lot in common with the desires I had to lead Forefront into the future. Were that of the same of Jason's intentions of continuing to, for him to contribute to skiing, and also like kind of just prove what he's learned along the way. We were talking a couple weeks back about like how I'm 5 years behind him, you know, and then like I'm telling him like, you know, my son's 6, his son's 11, you know, like all these things, like he's like, I wouldn't say I'm necessarily following his footsteps, but I'm on the exact same path as he was in building line and eventually selling it and creating his own thing and where he's arrived to now. And it's been really exciting to work with him. And I feel really optimistic about the future for Forefront with him in command and us in merging our resources and knowledge and experience. And, you know, I feel like I can bring some West Coast flavor to his lifestyle. and he can also teach me a bit about, you know, the East Coast, you know, morality of the industry. You know, there's a lot of really rich, enthusiastic skiers in New England. And I've always been, I've always admired that community. And I was just telling Jay when I was in Burlington not long ago, like how I've kind of longed to be associated with someone more officially with true East Coast roots, because I've always been inspired by it as a Midwesterner moving west to like now have the ability to really work with somebody who comes from a different side of the continent with a shared passion and has a similar history and profession. For me, it's just really exciting.
That's awesome. Well said, dude.
Maybe this hasn't been hashed out yet, but would there be reason to think that maybe there's some Forefront production that would then happen in Canada?
I think what makes the most sense is just for the, when it comes to the factories, just make the product wherever it's best suited to be made based on the construction and the volume as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like Matt currently builds in the White Room, you know, his R&D facility in Utah. He builds some of the lower volume skis, you know, and higher volume he's building in Europe because it just makes sense. And I think we would just, as we move forward and determine, you know, which skis have what volume, we'll make those calls. Like right now, I mean, all the skis that he's getting made are great. They're top of the line quality. You know, you can't ask for anything better. So it's not, there's no problems with the product. It's just maybe there's opportunity, you know, if there's just a need for it. If there, you know, I think the factory I'm using in Canada is good at very low volume, you know, and, but I'm not really even concerned about it. Like we'll just make it wherever it makes the most sense.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's where part of the opportunity is that, you know, independently, we're both building award-winning skis, and you know we've got some results that are going to come out this fall that I think people will be surprised at how well Forefront tested out. So the real opportunity is in maximizing, you know, the exposure of what we've accomplished to date with our products, and then, you know, figuring out a way just to communicate those values to a broader audience. You know, for so many years now, basically all 15, we've been our own worst critics. You know, like we'll get tired of a logo before the public even knows that it's our logo. You know, like we've been so quick to move because we've just been so focused on it, and we're constantly judging it. You know, we've been judging ourselves so vigorously for so many years that, you know, Jay's kind of opened up our perspective. Like, man, like what you guys have going on is amazing. We need to tell people about this. Like, what are you guys doing back there? Oh my gosh. Like you guys have all this history on the walls, all these skis you developed here. Like you got Thane Rich building skis for you right now. That dude was breakthrough performer last year. Like, why doesn't anybody know about this? I go to your website and there's no information about that. He's like, I'm like, man, I just think that we're so into it. We put such long hours in that we just think everybody else sees it the way we do. And so it's been cool to kind of realize that there's some, you know, there's some real treasures in this business that have an opportunity to, you know, inspire others. And so we're looking forward to I'm looking forward to learning under Jay and how to communicate those values and just do a better job of showing the world truly who Forefront is.
Like when I was looking at Jason's stuff, like he just has like basic things that he has illustrated
as it pertains to his brand, and it's like really well communicated. It's like I pride myself on kind of being a student of branding and messaging and stuff, and it's obvious that Jason just has a natural knack for it, because the way he communicates values within his own business, it's extremely clear. It's very value proposition oriented, and it's really inspiring. So like I know I'm gonna learn a lot from Jay just on that premise alone, and you know, that's part of where I think the real opportunity is, and just communicating more about who Forefront is and what it means to be an independent ski brand in today's arena. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. Say more on that. What does it mean to be an indie ski brand in today's arena?
Well, we're creating the trends. We're on the ground. We're skiing with the consumers. We are backing the sport of skiing the way that it was originally designed to be supported. There's a lot of other companies now involved in ski manufacturing that have dire economic interests, and that has a huge influence on how the sport is perceived by people coming to the sport for the first time, those who are trying to stay, you know, in with the sport in terms of like, you know, trying to stay as a relevant participant, something that snowboarding's challenged by in a bit. But, you know, with free skiing, it's like this whole era of skiing was born out of kind of a counterculture mindset where we're going to abandon what was the course for us to follow from generations before us and pave a new path. And with that, we need new brands. New brands will be responsible for designing new products. And ultimately, a new lifestyle is cultivated. And I think for Forefront, that's all we ever wanted, was to be able to feel adequate being recognized as a skier year round, irrespective of the season that you were in. You know, like as a kid going to school, I just wanted to wear a skiing t-shirt, but it was so hard to find a company that actually made like cool merch.
Yeah.
As a skier back in the day, you know, it was like a NASTAR thing, you know, like you got a pin or like you got like some weird right. Like mogul contest t-shirt or something that like had like a granola bar company name on it or something. Like you just wanted to be shown as a skier, and witnessing, you know, free skiing's humble beginnings and like wanting to build a brand that you could align yourself with. And like once you lose kind of the independent control of that brand, you're now just the byproduct of another, you know, you're just a product of a sport, you know, which can be dismissed as something you do seasonally and as a hobby. And for us, I mean, I could speak on behalf of Jay. I mean, we treat skiing as a year-round lifestyle, and we hope to communicate those values to our audience.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and the thing about the independent thing too is just everything Matt says is dead on. But you got to take the context of those big companies that also exist in this sport and how old they are. You know what I mean? Like, and there's nothing wrong with big companies. Like, we need big ski companies. Like, we need big publicly owned businesses in skiing, you know, because they're the ones that can really reach the masses, I guess. You know what I mean? They can support the masses, reach the masses, get the pricing down. But if that's all you have, it's not good either. If they're all independent, all small, it wouldn't be good either. I mean, like, when you say independent, it's not just that. I mean, that's like one term. It's like you're a microbrew or whatever, but it's just the fact that you're only doing this because of your passion, not just to make money for Wall Street investors, you know? And so you got to make a living. You got to be profitable. It's got to be a sustainable business financially. But ultimately, you're doing it because you want to give back to the sport. And that's like your number one priority for Matt is like, do things for the sport, make better product for the sport, innovate for the sport, support athletes, make movies, support movies. Like, and that's a big difference from when you're just a line item on a big spreadsheet, you know, in a public company. Really, the only goal there is to make a penny more every chance you can, you know, at any cost. If that means cutting this, cutting that, I mean, and that's fine. That's what those companies exist for, but they're just very different motivations. And you get the industry itself ends up having investments drained out of it. Like every time someone buys a ski from a corporation that's publicly owned, those profits go to people that own shares on Wall Street. they don't go back into promotions like real grassroots events and innovating a product that you may only sell 50 of. I mean, Matt's got a ton of models, which definitely threw me off, but like there's value in it too, where there's, you know, he's building like 30, you know, of this like ski that's over 190 centimeters long. I mean, this ski would never survive a product review for a public owned ski company. They just don't sell enough. It would just be crossed off. But for Forefront, they have, I mean, what's your longest ski, Matt?
That's a 196, the Renegade. Yeah.
Yeah. What width is that?
122.
Right. I mean, that's just, that ski cannot exist, you know, for most of the larger companies. And that's fine, you know, and that's the, so when you say like, what's the value of an independent ski owned ski company? There it is. It's developing, you know, with intense focus, you know, great product that's probably too small in numbers for the bigger brands to even consider. And so you're bringing something to a sport and adding variety and flavor and new, you know, features and performance that would otherwise get looked over and crossed off the list because it didn't make the cut in profit, essentially. So that's where I think the big contribution is from the smaller brands and why it's important to support them.
Yeah. So how long ago, what was the date of the first conversation when Jason said to Matt, or Matt, you said to Jason, hey, what if we teamed up here?
Well, the thing is, we've been doing that, like, I do that with everyone all the time in just a super casual way. And I think it's just not typical of most people. And so, like, I've been that way with Matt from day one. So I think it's probably been ongoing and, you know, there was no clear starting point. But I think once I understood better where he was at, you know, just being around for as long as he was and you can keep going, or is there not like an opportunity to kind of rev things up, like put the pedal to the metal, and what would it take to do that? You know, once we started talking about, oh dude, you should do this or consider that, it just started making more sense. Like, maybe I can help you, man. Like, maybe I can do this and do that. And it just kind of organically came. It wasn't like, I would like to enter into an agreement to acquire your corporation of, you know, like, it wasn't that way. And it wasn't like, no. Matt being, you know, it wasn't like Matt, like, dude, I need your help. We're going to do this or that. I mean, it was just like a very organic way of that conversation you'd have with any friend of yours, you know, that, hey, there's a cool opportunity. And then it just got more and more serious. And, you know, it made sense for both of us. Otherwise, it would not have happened, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like you look at like the ski season, like there's a lot of product managers and salespeople, marketing people, team managers, you know, with the big brands, and I'll see them, you know, at ski tests, you know, I used to go to trade shows and I'd see them there. And they're definitely like industry acquaintances, you know, once in a while, we'll come across the inbox on something, but most of the time it's just like blanket emails for insurance certificates for demos or whatever. But like for us, where Forefront's focused and where a lot of other younger brands are working towards, it's like we're staying in contact with these brands all year long. I mean, Jason and I were talking with Ben from Icelandic a couple weeks ago. I was on the phone with Luke from Moment this morning. I was over at Volley last week. You know, before the shakeup at Armada, I was up there twice a week working with Andy and Logan, you know, for a couple of months. Like, when we come around and see each other during the ski season, it's like, cool, let's party. Like, let's ski. Let's have some fun. Because we're working together all year long, and sometimes in the summer it's just, we're just grinding it out, building skis, figuring out strategies, way to build up marketing campaigns where we can all cooperate. And it really is like a pretty clear divide within the ski community as to like how these young brands interact year round versus how the younger brands interact with the bigger brands just seasonally. So there's a lot of like, you know, there's a lot of dialogue that occurs because we're manufacturing all summer, we're branding all fall, we're testing all winter. We're constantly sharing ideas, going in even on buying bulk materials from Europe because of how expensive it is to fly it over here. I mean, I've been buying bulk materials with other ski companies for the last 10 years, you know? And it's just like, hopefully that puts things in perspective for the audience out there. Like, this, the ski industry is like really small for how many people are involved. And yeah, there's enough room for everyone for sure, but like there has to be a pretty high level of cooperation amongst those who are in it. And to like have the opportunity now to work with Jay, like it's just a natural evolution of our relationship, his strategy, our brand, where we think the opportunity is to grow it, and what resources he has to bring to it. It's just like, it's just an obvious move for us. It's just another chapter in the book of Forefront.
Mm-hmm. So what, I mean, for some people out there who, if they heard this news and if they're like, oh crap, like what's happening? Like, I love Forefront, or I love, you know, Leventhal and Jay Skis. Like, what would you say for this coming season, maybe for the next season or two, what can you say now with confidence about what people can expect to kind of stay the same and what is going to start looking different in the near term?
Could I take it, Matt?
Please do.
Floor is yours, so, Jason.
All right. So here's the thing is, like, I didn't want to be involved with Forefront so I could turn it into Line Skis or Rosignol or Armada or J Skis or anything. Like, the value in a brand is keeping the identity unique. Okay. And that's true in any industry. You know, like Nike is trying to separate itself from Adidas and Harley from Suzuki and so on. So the what needs to happen in the best interest of the industry is for things not to dramatically change in terms of the brand's position. Like, Forefront is, I mean, Matt can extrapolate on this, but it's born, you know, it's a Utah, it's a West Coast, it's, they know powder skiing. Matt is waking up at 5 a.m, picking up his buddies and going hiking a mountain. You know what I mean? He's skinning up, he's skiing down, he's snowmobiling, he's getting out after it into the backcountry, and his skis reflect that, and his athletes reflect that. And that's not even terrain that I have access to out here. Not that I don't build skis for it. I do, of course. But that's the soul of the Forefront brand. Matt's the voice and the face of that brand, and he's going to remain that way. And so we don't want to negatively affect that or change that brand's position in the market. If anything, we want to magnify that position. We want to tell more people about it. And that's where I come in. Like Matt was saying, is My strategies that I've developed over the years in marketing, communication, digitally, and so on, we're just going to apply that, to use those tools to enhance the reach of the Forefront brand to more people. I mean, out here in the East, I mean, just yesterday, the guys that work on my website, outside agency, I told them about it. They didn't know what Forefront was. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the kids, you know, he's under 25 years old. Maybe that's part of it. In just recent years, it just hasn't been a presence. But there's a huge opportunity. I mean, people are tree skiing up here and free riding. And I mean, Matt's got the MSP that's going to be, it's, we already know it's ranked one of the top three skis in multiple magazines this year for just an all mountain ski, you know, under 100 waist width, just absolute ripper. No one knows about it out here. And so there's just opportunity to spread the word to more people and maintain that position. We're like, my brand, I'm doing limited editions only. I'm hand signing and numbering them. You know, they're just, it's a completely different feeling ski. You know, it's a different experience. That's why Forefront wins awards, Jay Skis wins awards, Armada wins award, you know, and so on and so forth. There's room for multiple brands, and we need to make sure we maintain clear division of what Forefront stands for that's different from everyone else. And we're going to do a better job. So, like, you're not even going to have to ask that question in the future. And it's not always easy just to explain, you know, verbally. There's going to be videos, there's going to be imagery. It's everything combined, you know, and we're looking forward to doing it. So,
yeah. Matt, what's your favorite Line Ski or J Ski that you've either just seen or been on over the years?
Sure. Well, I haven't really been able to verbalize this story yet with Jay, but a while back, at the very beginning of Forefront, I was skiing a lot with Skogan Sprang. We were filming with TGR. I was I was skiing for Fisher Skis at the time, and kind of realized I had reached an impasse with them and needed to start at least experimenting with the idea of building my own skis, because I just didn't feel like, well, I asked Jay, and he's like, we're pretty full in terms of team at the moment. You know, he had basically every A-list athlete in the game at that time on his brand, and a lot of the European brands were still kind of just fumbling around with how to modernize their race heritage and whether or not they would dive into free skiing or not. Most of them just dismissed it as just ski boarding. They didn't think there was going to be actual evolution like there was. But I took one of the prototype skis that I had made with Fisher, and Skogan lent me one of his motherships. And I actually used that mothership to trace the side cut geometry of the very first prototype I ever made. And
that's the way to do it, man.
Yeah. I mean, I took a piece of base material, put his ski on edge, and took a black pen and just dragged it along the side of the ski. And that was literally the side cut. And then I was like, how wide do I want to make this? And I just kind of cheated it in a little bit. I didn't make it as wide, I think, as the original mothership, but I just mirrored the side cut geometry on the other side, yeah. And like it was a ski that I ended up stickering up just because I was kind of in between sponsors, and I wanted a ski that was going to be capable of hanging out with Skogan, you know. And at the time, he was just starting to get his hands on one of those first super wide lines that came out with like spray painted white logo, color made. What are those called, Jay?
I mean, it was a mothership. It turned into the mothership.
Yeah,
like we made that was that an AK trip or no?
No, it's just like around Utah. They were all black. We just said line on on the white.
Yeah, there were some big wide ones. Like
they were huge.
They were the widest ski of the time. But like we just, it was a mothership, but then on like steroids, it turned into the Prophet 130. That wide ski, because Pollard wanted something to like ski backwards on, it would float. And so at the time there was no rocker going on, so we just went wider and wider and wider, and it was ridiculous. And that thing actually was really stiff, but like,
oh yeah,
it worked.
No, it was cool. So like hanging out with Sko, like we'd go out with TGR and try to shoot, and I was just like dogging because I was on like the everything ski from Fisher. They just thought this 80 something wasted ski should be able to do it all. Put a big tip on it. And so I stickered it up and was skiing online mothership so I could at least hang, you know. And like I was hanging, but I wasn't hanging nearly as tough as Sko. Like he was just like acid dropping off of cliffs, and it was like so loud, but he was so strong, he was just stomping everything, and I was just so envious. I started skiing on his backup motherships, and to be honest, like that was the first and only pair of line skis I owned.
Sick.
But it was a really story. It was a really pivotal time for me because it was based on that experience that I got the confidence to start Forefront. And I was like, if I want to be active in this segment of skiing and continue to inspire other skiers to ski like me, I need to be on adequate equipment that can allow me to do this type of stuff. And at the time, really, Line was one of the only brands that was adequately outfitting their athletes for where the sport's progression was headed. And so it was a huge influencer for me. In starting Forefront because of those motherships. So thanks, Jay. Thanks, Skogan.
That's so sick. That's the coolest story ever.
Man, I'm sitting here so tempted to say, like, you guys should bring back and do at least like a limited release of a mothership. And yeah. I would humbly if it wasn't going to be an identical rendition, I would offer my 2 cents happily on this. But I mean, that's a hell of a story. I mean, I don't even want to ask Jason now, like, what his favorite Forefront ski. There's no way the answer is.
I don't know what I was on, man. I don't remember what I try so many skis every chance I get, but I can't barely remember everything. That's part of my problem.
Okay.
But the bringing a ski back, I mean, you got to talk to Line about that, man. The funny thing is, people, you wouldn't believe how many times they'll say, oh, dude, I used to love the whatever. That thing was so soft, or it was so like deep side cut, or it was so fat. And I literally have just about one of every ski I've ever made in my basement. And I've looked at those, like the Elizabeth, Line Elizabeth. I mean, it's not that soft. Like at the time, 15 years ago, I mean, the stiffest ski today was considered soft back then, but I remember McConkey, like Shane rolled up to us, is like, what are those? I mean, they were like, the ski was a 170, and he thought they were like little kid skis. I'm like, dude, like that's what Skogan just won the X Games on. It was a 176. Huh. And but at the time, people were on 203s. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's all relative. I'd be curious. I should mount up a mothership in its original form. And I'll bet you.
You should send it to me. No one cares. No one cares what you think of it anymore. Come on.
I just want to let it be, and it's like in whatever it's like in your mind, let it live on like that. It was the greatest ski ever. Fine. Don't go back on it and start critiquing it. You know.
That's funny. Let's talk about the future. If you each had to bet $1,000. Would you bet that we'd be seeing more acquisitions like this one in the ski world, like in the next 5 years, and like specifically of indies kind of teaming up? Is this a thing now?
I don't know, man. Like the thing that the trend that I want to make sure doesn't happen is that, like in the 70s era of hot dog skiing, that like all these young rad brands come up and they go away, you know?
Exactly.
Like, that's, for me, that's the trend I don't want to see happening. And, you know, that's a concern of mine for sure, because of how like dramatic the market is changing, and just the general consumer patterns right now are in such influx that it could, there's a lot of young brands that are really rad that are susceptible to caving if the market, you know, shifts one way or another, or if we have another soft year. And so I definitely don't want to see brands go extinct. I mean, there's a lot of cool young brands out there, and I want to see them all stick around for Jay's, for what Jay said, you know, like they all give back to the sport, and that's a huge benefit to skiing as a whole. And one thing I've been thinking about lately is just like the significance of forum snowboarding for me coming into skiing. Like there was no brand in snow sports that was as provocative and inspirational and as admirable as there was forum. And maybe I just didn't see the inner details, and I'm just a skier from the Midwest, so what do I know? But like, man, like Their stuff was amazing. Their team was the best. Their segments were insane. They made good product. It sold. I mean, everything was there. And now what? Like, you go to forumsnowboards.com and it's like, this is the future site of Forum Snowboarding.
Oh, dude, that Burton bought it.
Yeah, so you go to Wikipedia, I mean, and it's like, oh, they sold to Burton in 2012. And that's the last line entry in Wikipedia. Hmm. And it's like, that is so sad for a generation to have come up with such huge influence of a brand like that. And now snowboarders who are born, the millennials that are born without even knowing of that brand and its influence, it's just crazy to think like there's kids out there who eat, sleep and breathe snowboarding, and they really don't even know about the influence that Forum had on the sport. And to me, that's like a real shame, you know, for the sport as a whole. And I don't want to see skiing fall victim to that kind of stuff, you know? So is it young brands have to band together? Maybe, you know, but they all have a role. And if they're contributing authentically, they need to stick around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, the challenge is just cause you make a cool brand doesn't mean you know how to operate a financially sustainable business. I mean, I didn't know, you know, my first 10 years were just complete disaster financially. I made it through somehow, you know, and most of these guys are getting a new investor every year and another loan that they're not going to pay back and whatnot. And you have to make a lot of mistakes, like decades worth, to teach yourself that, you know. And that's why I try to, you know, share anything I've learned with these other guys. I know how hard it is. Like, you're doing low volume. It's just, it's almost impossible. Like, you're running it on just pure sweat, you know. And so I think like cool brand, cool product, even good product doesn't always equal surviving, you know, the financial challenges of it. And the more you sell, the more money you need. Like, I mean, I always need more money, not because I'm not going to be able to sustain the business without it, but because the more product you want to make, the more money you need to make it. You know, like you, what people don't realize is the product that you buy in the store or you buy online in the fall had to be made, start getting made 6 months earlier, you know, so June, July, August, like those months in the summer when no one buys product, you have to spend money for the materials and the labor and the overhead to build it in advance. So you, whatever you think you're going to sell, you need half of that amount of money just to build it first. And that's probably, that's just in any business, a product-based business, not so much service, like the hardest part. And it, that's where like the growing pains come in. Like, oh, we're growing. But like, we don't have the money to actually make what people want. And so usually you got two options. Like either you're going to just keep selling off your company ownership and eventually own nothing. If you even can get an investor to do that or loans, or you're going to sell to a big corporation if you're lucky. And at that point, you know, you're not going to make any money doing it. No one's ever made money selling a ski company. Like it just, you know, it's skiing, you know? So like, you know, when I sold the K2 or Armada sold to Atomic, I mean, that really at the end of the day, that brand now is just a piece of that bigger brand. And every year that goes by, they get watered down more and more. I mean, I was part of that, you know, with Line. It's just inevitable. And so I didn't want to see that happen to Matt eventually, you know, if that was the case. Like, I just don't want to see good companies go get into the wrong hands. Not that there's anything wrong with like K2 or Atomic. I just think these independent, these brands need to breathe, you know, they need more space to prosper on their own, you know, separate from the confines of a big corporation. So maybe this is one of the answers, you know, consolidate resources, you know, bring, you know, like warehousing, for instance, we can share the warehousing and the communication with the warehouse and some of the customer service and the accounting and the finance. You know, there's just a lot of things that can be shared behind the scenes that have no effect on what you experience with the brand, that will help multiple brands. So maybe this is the beginning of a third option other than basically selling off your shares or being part of a bigger corporation, public company.
Yeah, and I think the communication is already there by nature within the spirit of the industry. These young brands are already speaking a lot to one another and, you know, cooperating on manufacturing and everything else. So, you know, there's not as much, like, vigorous competition in that side of the sport, you know. There's a lot more cooperation and collaboration. So, you know, whether it be that they become acquired by one another or they just start to leverage one another's strengths, I think the trend for sure is that they just need to start working together. And the ski industry is such a unique model, you know. Like every time I've had onboard an accountant or something, they're just like, what? Like, what is this? And I was like, oh, no, yeah, we just like get paid a year later. And, and like, they're like, I mean, some people like have never been able to come around to the unique nature of the ski industry from a practical business point of view. Mm-hmm. And so once you figure out your method and it works, like that's real value that you can offer to other people. And it's not like it's necessarily a service you can market and sell to a broad audience. Like you just figured out how to make it work. And that could be all it takes to help save another brand. So I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, collaboration and stuff that's still yet to happen in the small side of the industry. But it's gonna be important that it happens.
I should let you guys get going here shortly. I'm just trying to think. What's the obvious other question or questions I haven't asked?
Dude, you hit them all, man. You did a solid job here. Okay. You got a lot out of us. I didn't even know we had in us.
Yeah, you've asked us questions that Jason and I haven't even had a chance to speak to one another about. And it's kind of cool to be able to share a story like those motherships with you, Jay, over a public forum like this. Because I've, you know, just like little things that came into my life. And these last 15 years of running Forefront, where it would have been like cool to stop and like to share a story of significance once in a while, but we've always been on the run. And this opportunity has given us a chance to reflect a bit. So it's kind of cool too, you know. It's kind of like a twilight in a sense, you know. Like I want to like reach out to Dash and Skogan and be like, "What's up, guys?"
Yeah, coming.
You know, just because it's like these are names that are coming back to the surface because of this, and it's just cool that like we're able to start on this new path together and have all that significant history to carry along with us. It really inspires me.
Yeah, cool. That's cool. Well, guys, thanks. Thanks for the conversation and kind of sussing some of this out further. And it's going to be interesting to watch this new relationship go forward.
Right on.
So, yeah, thanks, John. Thanks for having me on with the Blister community. You guys are doing a great job here. And I just kind of backseat drive the auto feed, you know, when it hits the inbox. I just kind of scroll through all the reviews and stuff. And it's cool to have a chance to formally be part of this audience and this community. So I look forward to being part of it in the future.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'm still late, as every Blister reader knows, on my full review of the Raven, which is currently my favorite touring ski in existence. That's been a fun one, and I promise everybody the full review is underway, but things keep getting in the way, like, you know, you guys doing this stuff and then we have to have this podcast and then who's got the time, you know? So
we got some time till
winter hits.
Yeah, we're psyched.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thanks guys. Okay. Good luck with everything going forward, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the line.
Same to you and Blister, man. Okay. Later. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
That's it for this edition of the Blister Podcast. Many thanks to Matt Sturbins and Jason Leventhal for the conversation, and of course, to our strikingly handsome audio engineer, Justin Bob. Till next time, check out what we're up to online at blisterreview.com. Leave us some feedback or a 5-star rating on iTunes if you are enjoying these podcasts. And we'll talk to you again very soon.